Hi everyone, it's Linda Formicelli and welcome to our weekly Freelance Writers Den meeting. The Den is a learning and support community for writers fast. Today's Den meeting is about how to become a freelance social media manager, and our experts today are Ashley Cooksley and Kate Gardner. After each interview, we will spend about 10 minutes taking questions from our listeners, which you can leave in the chat, and you can go over there and say hi to everybody and start leaving the questions right now if you like. So our first guest is Ashley Cooksley. She has had more than 18 years of experience in the digital industry. She is the Chief Business Development Officer for eModeration, where her focus is on high-quality service and meeting social media and brand reputation goals for her clients. eModeration has worked with some really impressive clients like Toyota, Disney, MTV, Royal Caribbean, and Nokia. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. So, my first question is, what kind of person do you need to be for a social media manager? What qualities and personality traits and talents are you looking for in one?
Sure. I mean, I think it maybe sounds obvious, but we're always looking for someone who actually uses social media. So we often do get, I know, it's a bit of a dumb moment, but you'd be surprised how many people get in touch with us who, when we go and look at their LinkedIn or we go and look for a Twitter handle, we can't really find a whole lot. So, I know, and so we're certainly looking for people who actually use social media, and they use it for their personal use too. So when I'm asking them, what do you like about Facebook or what's the newest thing that you're using right now, they can actually say something that they're doing in their own personal life.
Right.
It is obviously really important, and I'm sure that a lot of people on the call who use, Facebook and Twitter often will know that you have to use it fairly regularly to stay on top of the changes. I mean, things change all the time. And so for those of you who are using Facebook on, say, your mobile app, you'll know that, there's a lot of changes recently to Messenger, and there's been a lot of controversy around it. And we'll stay on top of those kind of changes, and that's what we're looking for.
Right. And, when I was I wanted to interview you, and I also wanted a social media management freelancer, and it was very difficult for me to find somebody because a lot of people call themselves that, but then when you look at them, you know what I mean? Everybody calls themselves a guru, but not everybody is actually doing it. So
exactly. And I guess that's one thing I would look as well, is that I wouldn't want someone to call themselves a guru. To say that you're a guru really does kind of put yourself in a crazy position to say that you're on top of everything all the time. And frankly, it's almost impossible to stay on top of it. And I do it for a full-time job. So the other thing, though, I did want to make a point about, and this is something that obviously everyone on the call will do well already, is that we're looking for great writers, people who are great writers and who are quick thinkers. So, I'm sure that you guys have been on branded Facebook pages or on Twitter feeds, and you're kind of thinking to yourself, wow, that's surprising that they're writing on behalf of that brand. Maybe they're not great writers. So, there are a lot of people in the industry who don't have that quality. So obviously I think that's something, an edge that everyone on this call will have and that people will be looking for. Hello.
Are you still there?
I am. Was that a wonderful Skype moment?
I got disconnected, so sorry about that. So I missed the last part of that, but the recording got it, so it sounds like you probably answered that question fully.
Yeah, it's funny. I was just going into the chat. I was going to go, oh, my gosh, have I lost everyone? But the joys of technology, huh?
Yeah, that was, sorry about that. So, but I think what everybody wants to know is, where's a good place to find freelance gigs in social media management these days?
Well, obviously on social media, that's the best place to start. So, in terms of where we hire people, where we're looking on LinkedIn and Twitter. Those are the main places for us. And so, if you're looking for a job in social media, definitely start there. Start following the companies, the kind of companies that you want to work for. That way you'll see all the advertised jobs. For instance, at eModeration, we have about, I'd say about 5 or 6 open positions right now for people, and that's what we're using. We're tweeting and we're posting updates on LinkedIn pretty much nonstop to find good people. And then also, I mean, for those of you who are going to go to Twitter and start following people and trying to find work, I couldn't stress how important it is for you to create a list. So I know a lot of you will be familiar with Twitter, but it can get cluttered very easily and you'll miss information very easily. So get yourself a good list created in Twitter for sure.
Okay. And what if you're looking for more, maybe you don't want to freelance with a company, but you want to go directly to the client? Is that something that's done? And if so, do you know how you would find those people who are looking for somebody to do that for them?
Mm-hmm. I mean, really a good way to get in touch with, absolutely go direct to brand and not just through an agency. I would say that that's probably a bit harder path to follow. It's quite difficult sometimes to get in touch with those big brands and get to the people who are the decision makers to get that kind of work. But again, you know, I would be following them on Facebook and on Twitter. I'd be looking at LinkedIn. And then also you may find that there's an opportunity by seeing, you know, opportunities that perhaps they've missed. I know that we're probably going to talk about it in a little while, but how important it is for brands to stay engaged and to talk to their users. And when you see someone's not doing it very well, that's certainly an opportunity for you to get in there and mention it.
Oh, that's great. That's something we always tell freelancers, no matter what type of writing or consulting you want to do, is find what's missing with the client and how you can fill that. So it's perfect.
Exactly.
So what are businesses and entrepreneurs still doing wrong when it comes to social media right now?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, that I think the last question kind of segues quite nicely into this one in terms of what some brands may not be doing well. And that, I think the biggest one is response. So one thing I would say is that they've certainly gotten a heck of a lot better over the past few years in recognizing that social media is very powerful and it's where people are going to go to talk about their brand and to, post customer service issues and that sort of thing. So, you know, the response is still very, very important. I don't know if anybody on the call has a PR background, but kind of back in the olden days of pre-social media, they said that, you know, PR had about 24 to 48 hours to respond to an issue. They would write a press release and they would get it out and they would talk to the papers and that sort of thing. Now we're saying that you've got 15 minutes on Twitter and 30 minutes on Facebook to respond to an issue. And that could be a crisis
Wow.
or it could just be customer service. It is so fast now. And a lot of those big businesses still aren't embracing that. A lot of them do it really well, but, you know, the other thing, too, I would say is a lot of them are still consider it to be a one-way conversation, and, you know, for those of you who use social media, you know what it's like to potentially post to a brand's Facebook page or to at mention them on Twitter and actually receive a response. It's pretty amazing
right.
when that happens, and you feel special as a consumer and as a user. You feel valued, so it's really important that they do that as well.
Wow, okay. And you know, in the chat, we got a question from Helona that I think we should take right now, which is,
okay.
What does it mean to do social media for a company? What are we talking about here?
Sure. That's a really good question, too. It's probably good
yeah.
to kind of back up, isn't it, and explain what that actually means.
Yeah.
So doing social media for a company, it really is talking about how you engage with your consumers on any social platform. So that could be Facebook and Twitter. It's becoming more around Instagram and Pinterest. I've even seen some agencies and brands starting to use Vine, for instance, to do some campaigns as well. But it's basically doing that would mean understanding what the company's overall marketing strategy is and seeing how social fits into that. It would be creating content. So, you know, what are those tweets that they're posting? What are the Facebook updates? It could be engaging in a customer service type role and thanking people for posting on the page. So it might be worth doing an entire hour just on what social media actually means. It's quite wide-ranging these days.
Yeah, and, you know, you talked about response, and one question that brought up is that if you were a freelance social media manager, you're working with a client, You know what happens when they start getting some sort of PR crisis coming up, like somebody's angry about something? Do they have to then, like, you know, confer with the company, or do they have authority to do things on their own and take care of things? Do they have that much authority?
It depends on the situation. I mean, if I were someone who was just starting to work with a company in the same way that we do at eModeration when we first start working with a client, is that is one of the first things we determine. What do you want us to do when we see these types of situations? And we will define what those types of situations are. Anything that, you know, poses a risk to the brand reputation, could be a big customer service issue. So, for instance, we have a client, a financial client, whose all of their ATMs went down at the same time. And so you can only imagine how upset people were to not be able to get money out. And, of course, they all went to social media, right? So we were on the call with that client almost immediately saying, hey, you know, we've noticed this coming up on Twitter and on Facebook. What are you guys doing? And really coordinating a response is key. So I would urge anyone to have that conversation before it happens to make sure that you know what that process is that they want you to follow.
Right. This is so interesting because I think a lot of people have this vision that I'm just going to sit there and write really funny tweets for them all day, and that's my job because I love tweeting or Facebook. So it's really interesting to know.
Well, if you work for Oreo, you can do that all day.
Is that what they're
really
doing?
Fantastic tweets. Oreo is fantastic. Charmin is another one that's really fantastic. And, again, that kind of goes to one of the first questions when you're saying, what do you look for in a social media manager? And, you know, it's that great writing and the quick wit. And just to kind of carry on from that, I'm sure you guys – you may remember in 2013 when the Super Bowl had their blackout, and Oreo just, you know, seized the moment and tweeted out that you can still dunk Oreos in the dark. And it was tweeted out within, like, I don't know, maybe 60 seconds of it actually happening. And that kind of quick wit response just really won the Super Bowl in a lot of ways, especially on social media.
Wow. You know, that brings up a question that Linda asked. If you are doing this for somebody, do you have to be monitoring it 24 hours a day then to get that kind of response and also that response to people? Is this a 24-hour mm-hmm. job for a freelancer, or how does it work?
It really depends. I mean, the Oreo example, for instance, would have been an agency that does work for them 24/7. They would have been online during a big event like the Super Bowl because they would have had advertising dollars invested at that time anyway, right? They just kind of seized the moment because they were there. I would say that for the big brands, we're talking about the Walmarts, the Disneys, those guys, absolutely it's 24/7. But, you know, if you're looking for kind of a freelance options, it may not actually need to be 24/7. And then also, so for instance, with our services, we do say 24/7, but not everyone needs someone sitting there around the clock. I will say that a lot of the big brands utilize other tools to notify them when something's happening. So, you know, we call those social listening tools, such as Radian6 and some other tools, and it will actually alert you and highlight something to you if something's happening. So you're not sitting there in front of a computer 24/7.
Right. And I'm guessing they also have lots of people doing social media for them, and it's not just one freelancer sitting there 24 hours looking at Twitter.
Absolutely, yeah. It can certainly become addictive when you're doing it, and you might find yourself sitting there doing it all the time. But it's probably not completely necessary for every brand.
Right. All right. And another question is, what is the hottest social media platform right now that freelancers should be sure to get a handle on if they want to work in this field?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I see that question asked all the time on Twitter when I'm reading things. And you always sit here and go, okay, well, what would it be besides Facebook and Twitter? But really the answer is still Facebook and Twitter. They are still the most popular platform. And I would say if you're going to invest some time in learning something and really getting to grips with it, definitely start with Facebook and Twitter. But, you know, there are a lot of other apps that have come out, social media platforms. You know, Snapchat or Secret. There's a couple of kind of anonymous ones like Secret, Whisper, Yik Yak. you know, they're quite obscure. Some of you may have heard of them. Some of you may not have. But really, it's still the big ones. And then also Instagram and Pinterest. That would be where I would spend my time.
Okay. And how do you keep an eye on, or how do you keep a handle on what new ones are coming out all the time?
We have a big team of people who do it. It's really, I tell you, it's a lot to stay on top of it all the time. You know, me personally, I am on Twitter a lot, and I'm also reading a lot of the industry magazines. So, for instance, you know, Ad Age, or there's a really great one out of the UK that I definitely recommend people to read. It's called The Drum. And it's more of a marketing publication, but if you go onto their site, there is a whole social media section, and it's almost where I get all my news. I really like it a lot, and that's how I stay on top of it. But if I'm honest, if you sat here and asked me to give you a 10-minute summary of what Yik Yak is, I would be Googling it right now because there's so many out there to stay on top of.
Right. Well, do you think there are any platforms that are kind of on the ascendant? You know, which ones are going to become more important for people who want to get into this to learn and know now?
Mm-hmm. You know, the ones that are going to be, I think that what we're seeing in terms of rise of popularity are the anonymous type tools. But, you know, I think that the thing with spending a lot of time learning those tools is that I'm not sure what the value of those are to advertisers and to brands just yet. It's really hard, I think, for a big brand, let's just use Oreo as an example, to take a Snapchat, for instance, and turn it into this really powerful platform to talk to their users. So, you know, I think it's interesting and it's good for you to know about the new ones, but in terms of which ones are going to be really important in the future, it's still Facebook and it's still Twitter right now with some Pinterest and Instagram sprinkled in. So those are the ones that I would certainly spend some time on.
Okay. And there are no platforms then right now that are becoming obsolete that are hot right now, but people can kind of spend less time with them if they want to get into this kind of job?
Yeah, it's interesting because of course, I think anyone in this industry who's asked that question, the very first one they're going to think of is Google Plus.
Yep.
And yes, right. It's you know, it was meant to be the rival to Facebook. I don't think anyone thinks that it is a rival to Facebook at this point. Is it going to become obsolete? I don't know. I think Google has invested so much into it that it's probably not going to become obsolete. It's just going to be different than what it is right now. So I don't want to write it off just yet. But
right.
I do, you know, but in terms of the other platforms, you know, I did mention those anonymous apps, you know, the Secrets, the Whispers, Yik Yaks. There are so many of them in the market right now that I think it would be difficult for them all to survive. I think they'll probably get swallowed up by another bigger platform and get integrated in that way, that, you know, in the same way that WhatsApp was just purchased for $19 billion.
Wow.
I know, right? We're in the wrong business.
Yeah, tell me about it. So I'm guessing that they're looking for some sort of ROI, but it seems so hard to pin down. And I was wondering what metrics and analytics are important to get to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, social media ROI, I mean, that's kind of the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
In terms of how you prove that. And, you know, there are people who are proving it quite successfully. And, you know, we are actually one of our clients is a retail client, and every time I sit down with her, I'm really surprised by how well she can really pull out how social media has affected her bottom line in terms of sales converted, mm-hmm. and especially going to in-store as well. It's a really mm-hmm. difficult thing to prove. But I think in terms of analytics, what's really important right now is the social listening aspect. It's brands listening to what people are saying about them, not just at them, but about them in general on social. So, you know, it's not just me saying, hey, Toyota, I love your car. It's me tweeting out about how much I love my Toyota, but then Toyota picking up on it. So that, I think that is what's really powerful right now, is really understanding what those conversations are about your brand. And then how to harness that. So what does that actually mean once you find those conversations? You know, you can, it's basically real-time market research. So, you know, those big brands like Toyota might take that information and give it back to development, or, you know, you can kind of see its way throughout the rest of the company on what the public is actually saying about their brand. Really powerful.
Okay, great. And what do you think is the first thing someone should do after this call if they're interested in becoming a freelance social media manager?
I mean, I think the first thing is to make sure you're using it, right? I mean, that again, I know that's another duh thing to say, but certainly, you know, go out there. And I have to admit that I wasn't a big Twitter user until I would say probably in the last year or so. I didn't really get it. I didn't really get how I would be using it personally. And so I just had to get over it and get in there and really start to use it. And now I do, and now I really enjoy it. So it's just, you know, trying to wrap your head around what the different platforms can do for you. And again, I would focus on the big ones, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. You know, read industry blogs and news, like I mentioned, The Drum or Ad Age. Mashable is a really big one, of course. That's probably the best one to be reading. I would also say, you know, follow the big influencers in social media. If you just did a Google search for social media influencers, you would get a list of probably 50 people to start following and start learning from. And that's basically what I did as well. The other thing that I would suggest is going to your LinkedIn and your Twitter profile and, you know, just cast a critical eye over it. If a potential recruiter were looking at you or looking at your profile, what would they think right now if they saw it? So go through there. Don't be afraid to put your true personality on there. I think people, you know, recruiters certainly like that, and especially when they're looking at your profile, say, on Twitter, for instance. So, yeah, sorry, just a laundry list of things there.
Oh, no, that's great. But, you know, that brings up a question, which is, if you're trying to impress people to hire you, what kind of following do you need to have? You know what I mean? Like when they look at you and they see how many people are following you on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, is there a number that they're looking for? Or,
you know, there isn't for us. You know, e-moderation, there's not, you know – I'm sure, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Clout, but if you go to Clout, you can put in your Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and some other things, and it'll give you a score. And I will say that, you know, companies like a Toyota, when they're doing the social media listening I was mentioning a minute ago and looking at conversations, what people are talking about, they will look at people's Clout score to determine how influential they are, right? So Clout is a really good tool just to kind of, I guess, sense check, your street cred, per se, on social media. But I wouldn't say that, you know, we only hire someone with a 50 or above Clout score, because that doesn't mean everything. But it is important. It is important to be active on there and for someone to be able to see that you are active. And in terms of followers... I was just going to mention in terms of followers on Twitter, you know, you do have this kind of super uber power users in social media who have, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers. But I know some really wonderful, very influential community managers and social media managers who have, you know, 1,500 or less. So it's not everything. It's just important to be involved.
I'm sure that's comforting. That's good to know. So we have about 6 minutes left. Do you mind if we get to some of the listeners' questions?
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
Okay, so I know you saw this one on the Den. Penny asked about Hootsuite. She says, I currently have a subscription, but have been slow getting up to speed using it. I'm currently managing Facebook and Twitter accounts for a large horse show, a dressage trainer, and myself. Is Hootsuite my best option? I'm going to post that in the chat so people know what Hootsuite is spelled like.
Sure. I mean, just so everyone knows in terms of what Hootsuite is, I mean, it is a way to manage your different social media presences. So you can put Twitter and Facebook in there, and you'll be able to write your tweets from there or write your Facebook content from there. And it will also give you some analytics. So I actually do think Hootsuite is a great tool. They do have a professional version that you pay for, but I would say that the Hootsuite free version is great, especially for people who are kind of learning the ropes, or if you're not managing, say, Disney's social media presence, free is probably fine. It does allow you to create content, to schedule content, so you can write a post and say, you know what, I want this to be tweeted out on Saturday morning at 8 a.m. You can look at your followers. You can see how you've increased your followers. You can see how many people retweeted something. And so I do think it's quite a powerful tool. And, you know, one thing I would say to Penny is, yes, I think you have the right tool for what you're using it for. And just spend more time with it. And there's a lot of really great online tutorials for Hootsuite to learn really how to use that free version.
Great, thank you. And you know, we've had a couple of questions on this topic of how much should a freelance social media manager charge and how are they paid? Are they paid by the number of posts, a flat rate, or so on?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. And it really varies. It's been a long time since I've been in the kind of the how much writers get paid loop. I did come from a content editorial background where I used to get articles written at my previous work. But I can't remember exactly what those rates were, so it's been a while. But in terms of how we pay people or how we would charge, it can be both ways. It could either be as an hourly rate. So, you know, I'm going to manage your social media for you. I think it is probably going to take me 2 hours a day, and I charge X amount per hour. Or, you know, if they're saying, I just really want you to do my content strategy, then we would charge, say, like a monthly fee for that content strategy. And we would say, okay, well, within that, you get X amount of tweets and X amount of Facebook posts. But in terms of the actual rate I would charge, I wish I had a good answer for you, but it just varies so much. Social media content is extremely valued by some brands, and others are still learning how valuable it is. So they don't want to have to pay a whole lot for it. But I do think generally speaking, though, that I've seen an upwards trend in terms of the value and people being able to charge decent rates for it. So be bold, I would say.
Are you there?
I am. Sorry, I don't know if I lost you again.
Oh, it cut out for me right when you were about to say the amount.
Oh, I know. That's probably what everyone's saying. Just say a dollar amount, and I wish I could, but I don't have one.
Oh, okay. I thought you were about to say one, and it suddenly got quiet. I was like, oh, no, I missed it. So, Okay. Linda is wondering if there's anywhere online or a guide somewhere that kind of parses out the social media, like what the audiences are for, what the pros and cons are for in terms of business.
Mm-hmm. I would say a really good place to start is Mashable. And so I don't know if, and I'm not in the chat, so I don't know if,
I'll do
actually I'll just kind of go back there. So I see that you just posted that in there. So I don't know how familiar people are with that, but I'll tell you they have a guide to almost everything. So you could go through there, and there will actually be a section about Twitter, and then it'll break it down into, like, the hundreds of articles they have about Twitter and how to use it, how to build up your followers, why brands would use it, that sort of thing. So I'd say Mashable is a really good start.
Okay, wonderful. Well, you know what? I think we're out of questions, and we're right at 3:30, so I would like to say thank you very much. That was really great.
Great. Thank you. I really enjoyed it, and I'll go into your chat.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Take care. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
So that was wonderful, and we are going to get to Kate Gardner in just a minute, but I wanted to say, if you're joining us late, this podcast is brought to you by the Freelance Writers Den. Den members enjoy a wealth of benefits, including access to the Junk-Free Job Board, free writer website reviews, weekly live events, supportive forums, and access to all of Carol Tice's past e-courses and live event recordings, including the recording of this event. And you also get access, for free, to the 4-week boot camps, which are $197 to non-members. The next boot camp is going to be really cool. It's in September. It's coming up really soon, and it's on self-publishing. Are you there?
Hey, Kate.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Let me read your bio. Kate Gardner is a digital media strategist working with a number of mainstream media brands on social media and audience engagement. Over the past 7 years, she has engaged millions of people through social media, content marketing, and traditional broadcasting channels. She currently works primarily with Newsweek and IBT Media and teaches at the New School in New York City. Thanks for being here, Kate.
Hi. Nice to see you. Here you go.
So, I was wondering what made you decide social media management is what you wanted to do?
So I graduated from journalism school in 2009, which is the height of the Great Recession, as it were. And instead of following a more traditional path, I saw that I could go a lot further, faster, and be more efficient and effective by doing social and by helping to bridge the gap between the legacy brands that I love and the digital audiences that they just don't quite understand. And that was kind of the start of it. And then, I've done all over the world, both doing trainings and then doing live curation and live social media. So, you know, highlights of that were sort of 24/7 coverage of the BP oil spill in 2011, and then the Arab Spring in 2012. And then I've had a variety of clients ever since. But all of them have been mainstream media companies that are kind of struggling to make this transition into mostly digital, fast, and reactive.
Right. Wow, that's impressive. Let me just ask everybody, can you hear Kate okay? Because you're coming in a little fuzzy for me. It's hard to understand you.
Okay, guys. Is this better?
Yes, thank you. So what I think everybody would love to know is how you landed your first client in social media management.
It was sort of a natural progression. When I was at PBS NewsHour, I started freelancing in addition because it's, you know, public media, so you don't get paid enough. And then I incorporated around the same time, and as I was doing that, I'm an inherent networker, so I'm out in the field talking to new clients just about every day. And I don't even remember who my first client was, but within 6 months, I probably had about 10. And then past 7 years, I've had between 35 and 45, somewhere in there.
Nice. And when you say you're a networker, you mean online networker?
No, I mean in real life.
Whoa. All right. That's very interesting. And you landed social media clients that way.
I land, I work, I'm a very specialized talent. So I've built a business around being incredibly niche and very, you know, and sort of, there aren't that many people who design the strategies that I do. And I think the reason that my business has been successful is primarily because of how specialized my work is now.
Right. And, you know, I think you were on the call when I was talking to Ashley about all the people who call themselves social media gurus. And I was wondering what you do about the stigma associated with social media managers who aren't professional or people who think it's not a, you know, quote-unquote real job. Do you have that problem?
I have that problem all the time. And what I do is I avoid the terminology. And, you know, my company is a company. You can hire my company to do things. We do social media management, but we call it audience engagement. And that allows you to sort of broaden your specialization. You can go and, you can manage Twitter and Facebook. And if you guys want to talk a little bit more about pricing, I can talk about how I do that. But it's a bigger picture strategy, and it's about having a team of five that can build up to really whatever projects we want and whatever projects come in. I spend probably 25% of my week doing business development, 25% doing sort of project management, and then 50% on output. And that's been more or less my routine for the past 5 years.
Wow. Okay. And what resources should people look to when they're wanting to go into this field themselves?
You know, you have to – face-to-face networking is something that – it has been really the way for me to get clients. And it's been the way that most of my work has come together. You know, I think we become too heavily reliant on digital tools for digital marketing. And at the end of the day, if you haven't actually met the person, they're not going to trust you as much as someone that they've met in real life. And that's it's an interesting thing to realize. But once you're trying to go after big clients, you know, if you're looking for contracts that are $250,000 and up, that's what you need to be doing. You need to be sitting in rooms with the CEOs and the directors of marketing and the directors of editorial and content production. You don't need to be sitting there on Twitter talking to your friends. And I think that is the thing that's the thing that shifts between, you know, the small work, which is nice but tedious in terms of building and tedious in terms of collection, and the bigger projects. As big businesses, both media companies and consumer brands, shift up more of their strategy that way, you can kind of see who's investing and you can kind of see who their competitive set is. If you aren't the one who is making the change for a specific niche, you can look at their competitors and go for their second, whoever their competition is. If you're the one who comes in the room saying, hey, you know, I want to, let's see, here's an example. I mean, Coke and Pepsi are too big almost to be examples, but if you think of those as a binary and you think of Coke and their social strategy and Pepsi and their sort of their game room strategy that's being applied across the corporate level, you know, you can say, okay, so Pepsi is investing, what, $20 million in doing this and that, and Coke is investing it in this way, who's going to have a budget available to me for a project that is, you know, more than my annual salary or my desired annual salary? And that's kind of how I work. You know, there was someone earlier who was talking about figuring out what tools work best for her business, and I would say, you know the tool set that you need for a specific size client. If the audience is going to be fewer than 10,000 people, then you need tools that do one thing or another. If you have something that needs to scale, you know, and you have a team of multiple parties, you need a completely different set of tools, and that's going to be a completely different kind of a project. And right. I think that's kind of the realization that you need to be able to do. You need to be more of a Swiss Army knife in terms of this, because the platform's changed so much and because the way content is produced is so important. One of the things that was nice when I joined social media was that, or when I started doing this, is that more of a job is basically that it uses your writing skills, and that's a great primary thing to have. But the secondary thing that you need to have is an eye on both the money and sort of the return on your investment. If you're spending all of your day chasing a client who's paying you $1,500 a month, if you're in a small market, that might make sense. If you're in a bigger market, it doesn't, because you could be making more than that per hour or per day, really depending on what you want and how you think about your business. And, you know, this has become a really competitive field, and that's kind of the challenge. You know, there was a sort of a everyone for together mentality originally, and now as people have become more and more accountable for numbers that they may or may not be able to serve, you know, the attitude has changed a bit, and it's gotten more cutthroat.
Right.
But all of that said, you know, there's a lot of money to be made. It's just kind of figuring out your niche, figuring out your specialization, figuring out how money is made in that industry, and then figuring out where your intersection is.
Okay. By the way, it sounds like you're kind of moving away from the phone and then closer to the phone. Like sometimes you get really
awesome. It must be the mic on this, and I'm sorry, I don't have another one with me.
Okay. We'll try to make it work. But, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned, to go back a little bit, visiting the client. And I'm wondering, does that mean you're doing local, or does that mean people are flying you places and you're meeting them that way, or you're doing long-distance travel, or how's it working for you?
I am on the road 26 weeks a year. I've been on the road 26 weeks a year for 5 years.
Wow.
I am a single person. So that is how I can do that, and half of my budget from work is kind of allocated to business development-related things. You know, it is a great and wonderful lifestyle in a way. But if you're a person who needs to be more geographically stable, then what you need to do is focus on your local markets, unless you're here in New York. And that it kind of is how the business has come to be. Like my face-to-face schedule is literally, you know, last week I was in London and Berlin meeting with clients. So 2 weeks before that, I was in Utah. 2 weeks before that, I was in Chicago. You know, and I spend most of my time on the road developing a client base that's going to be long-term. Because the other thing that is currently happening is as social media becomes just sort of the rigor and goes in-house, this industry isn't going to specifically survive. And so building up a business practice that can last beyond sort of what's trendy right now is really the important part to me.
Right.
You know, I come into this business from journalism. Journalism is dying as well. And I think that's a bigger part of the process and problem.
Right. So to take a different tack, what programs and apps do you use when you're working for your clients? What are the best ones out there?
It really depends on the size of the client. As I was saying, it's a fewer than 10,000 sort of audience. So if you're a small town, you're in a small industry, that kind of thing. I go with whatever everybody else is using. Hootsuite is an option. I hate them for statistics, but I don't mind them for programming and team collaboration. Sprout Social is my second favorite there. The next tier mm-hmm. would be something like Simply Measured, which is sort of a mid-range tool that gives you better analytics. If analytics are part of what you're reporting, that's kind of important. And to have access to good analytics is really good. And then the big ones become Livefyre, Social Flow, and a couple of other ones that work with Radian6 and some of the other paid analytics programs. And it really depends on scale.
Wow, you know, Ashley mentioned Radian6. Is that how expensive is that for a freelancer to get? I mean, what is it, Radian6?
Radian6 is another cousin of Omniture. You know, if you're looking at Google Analytics, Radian6, and Omniture, get different analytics and different tools. Freelancers are likely going to be accessing Radian6 or Omniture through their clients. They are not going to have it on their own. It is going to be the tool that has already been installed. So, for example, I think the last time I used Omniture was at CBS, or with CBS Interactive, and it does do well. It does do some scale metrics better than Google Analytics does, but I would say off the top of my head that the majority of freelancers are going to engage with Google Analytics, and that's going to be how you do reporting. Mixture of that with, you know, you can use Twitter's analytics tools now. You can use Hootsuite, so you have to pay for those, which is why it's annoying. You can use Bitly. You can use any number of other things, but it really depends. You know, I think my suite of tools that I use as a freelancer is somewhere in the range of about, it's under $500 a month mostly. My suite of tools that I use for internal clients is more in the range of $2,000 to $5,000 a month.
Right. Oh, wow. Okay. And in terms of social media outlets, which ones are you and your clients primarily using?
The easiest ones to sell are Facebook and Twitter. So we start with Facebook and Twitter, and then we work out from there. So if you've got a good, if the client has a good grasp of their Facebook and Twitter strategies relative to their content strategy, then we figure out how to scale accordingly on those two platforms, staff those appropriately, and then move past them. My next tier is usually a mixture of LinkedIn, Instagram, and Pinterest, depending on the kind of client. And then we move beyond that to doing a more sophisticated Reddit strategy, using Reddit advertising, things like that. But it really depends on where we're starting with the client and where they want to end up, and then also what metrics they're using and what metrics they define themselves by.
Okay. And when you say we, do you have a lot of employees, or who is working with you?
I have a huge number of people who work for me on 1099. So I hire a lot of freelancers.
Oh, all right. Interesting. And if if you're looking at freelancers to hire, what are you looking for in someone?
It really depends on the resume and on the project. So, for example, I've hired people to work on a short-term movie project. So they had a decent amount of experience. I think the people we hired eventually had about 800 followers on Twitter when I started the project. They had a good grasp of what needed to be done and how quickly they were very easy to work with. And then in terms of team fit, you know, they were really interested in giving their all for the project, though they also understood that it was a transitional project and wasn't going to be short or wasn't going to be long term.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we talked a little bit about how you work with your clients. What is your process for marketing to clients? How are you getting those meetings in the first place?
I am. I spend most of my time getting introductions and meeting new people. You know, in those, if I do, I do 4 days a week roughly networking. You know, I follow up immediately on email. I am always on Inbox Zero. I look up target clients and find ways to meet people that work there or work in the position that I need to talk to. But it's mostly through the existing network I have. I use that to build a secondary network.
Okay. All right. And what's your intake process for a new client? How do you get set up to start working with somebody new on their social media?
It'll depend on the size of the client. If it's a pitch meeting and we win a contract through a pitch meeting, then we'll have laid that out in our pitch and in our proposal. So, you know, we'll have 2 to 3 weeks of onboarding, followed
mm-hmm.
by sort of experimentation and analysis of the experimentation, and that depends on the length of the contract. So that's usually measured in months, preferably.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go from there to you know, is this how long term is this contract, and what are our deliverables? But it really depends. My minimum contract right now is at least 6 months,
mm-hmm.
because that's how long I think you need to be able to make any change. And then depending on the size of the institution, we have a process for that. For a really small client, so for someone who has a small retainer or a very short term project, it's slightly more casual. But it's based off of what their main desire is. So, for example, if I'm working on a book project, it's a mixture of, okay, how do we get the right people to participate here?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we, you know, who are the influencers in this industry? How many, you know, do we need to work with a PR or press agency? And identifying needs like that, and then sort of minimizing the amount of time that I put into the project relative to the deliverability. So, for example, if a client would prefer, you can give them a sort of a menu, and they pick the parts of that menu. So do they want social media? If they want social media, do they want to compose it and us to sort of encourage it, or do they want us to compose it and distribute it? And if so, how much of it and how long? And then if there's a launch date, you know, working back from the launch date, how do we produce the biggest size event that we can, either digitally or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how do you balance your own personal and business social media while also working on your client's social media? I mean, is it difficult to kind of juggle the two?
My social is work, and my work is social. I use Pass for my super close friends, but at this mm-hmm. point, the size of my personal networks is kind of diminished any sort of personality. you know, my Twitter does reflect some of my quirks, but it also controls my messaging to an extent so that, you know, whatever's going on in my personal life is very rarely displayed on social media. And that's very, very intentional.
And do you ever get burned out on all of this?
Burnt out? You know, one of the best parts and one of the reasons I stay freelance, no matter how many clients try to onboard me, is because I have an awesome lifestyle. I love traveling, obviously, and so I spend all of this time on the road. And then I built in a lot of vacation time and a lot of really good adventures. I have gotten burnt out in the past. Right after the Arab Spring, I took a month off and did nothing useful. Right after the BP oil spill, I did the same. And took 2 weeks off after the Newsweek launch and you know, contemplated things. But, you know, I think because I'm running my own business, because I believe so heavily in a digital culture and sort of both 24/7 availability and 24/7 unavailability, I've set up a lot of boundaries.
Wow.
And those boundaries are really helpful.
That's good to hear, because I think what's kind of ironic is that many writers want to do social media, but many of us, like myself, are introverts at the same time, so you get really your energy gets drained when you're networking all the time, so it's good to know you can, you know, take those breaks.
You know, it takes a lot. You have to build up a client base, and you have to teach the client base both how to work with you, and you have to be professional in the way you work with them. But you also have to show them exactly what the ground rules are for working with you. You know, if you are a person who comes in and every time they email you at 11 o'clock at night, you respond, then you've taught them that that's acceptable.
Right.
And while they are your client and while you need to serve them, you also can respond as effectively at 9 a.m. the next morning as you do at 11 p.m. And in some cases, it's a better it's better business strategy.
Yeah, probably. So let's get on to some of the questions. And, you know, a bunch of people are asking about payment, you know, what social media freelancers make. And I know Ashley had a hard time answering that question because it's just all over the place. But are there any guidelines or averages you could throw out there?
What I work on this from two ways. I look at the size of audience. I look at the annual income of the company. I look at the impact that work I can do can have. And then on the other side of it, I look at the annual salary that I need to make to fill my debts and to sort of satisfy my lifestyle. And then I come to a number that's somewhere in between those. So if you're a very lowly freelancer down at the bottom of the food chain and, you know, you're coming in and writing like weekend tweets or something, the rate seems to be between 15 and 50 an hour, depending on what kind of audience you have. But, you know, the average annual contract for an agency type thing, where if you and a friend or you and another person are the entire agency, you know, that can be around $100,000 a year, which is about 50, 60 bucks an hour.
Okay. And another question we have is, what's a good way to niche yourself? In other words, how do you find that niche of that industry that you want to serve in social media and know it's one?
Yeah, you know, if you have a passion, you can build from that passion. So the reason I picked up on that horse person earlier, you know, I rode horses for a long time. I rode varsity in college. I could be very knowledgeable about horse shows, and I can be really knowledgeable about that industry. And thus, I can specialize in it. And then what I do is look at the competitive set and figure out where people who like horses are. And then I figure out how to be the best at serving those communities.
Okay.
So you can work from there.
Yeah.
You can also look for a dollar value type product and be like, okay, I'm really good at selling boats or trees or whatever, and then specialize that way.
Okay. It's funny, you're cracking me up with the horse thing, because we have a horse lady on here right now who writes about horses, so I think she'll love hearing that. And we have one more question, which is, what is your value proposition, or what is your elevator speech when networking? When somebody asks you what you do, how do you respond?
I'm Kate Gardner. I do audience engagement with major media companies, bridging the gap between those guys with the big brands and the little guys who've got the cool toys.
Awesome. That was easy. Do we have any other questions, everybody? Linda says, I'm a horse lady, too. Oh, she said, she said, most of what I see on Facebook, even my business account, is people sharing their daily meals and clothing. And Facebook has said it, so if you like a business page all the time, that's all you get. How do you balance?
Well, Facebook is its own little monstrous beastie. They've taken a lot of the fun out of it, and I spend a lot of time arguing the Facebook algorithm. As a person who works with it every day, I guess that from a personal consumption perspective, I honestly haven't had an honest audience on my Facebook page since its inception. I've used it for work almost since I've been on Facebook. And I got on there in 2006 or 5 or something, or 4. Ew, that's 10 years. you know, so that was a very different, you know, my Facebook has liked like 5,000 pages, half of which have been for work. And also I'm enrolled in a variety of Facebook beta programs. So I really never see an honest user experience. And I guess the thing to keep in mind is you don't either. They are experimenting on you, and they are dividing their audience, and they know what bucket they've got you in. You know, you can like and like and like more of your friends' stuff if you want to see more people. You can like and like and like more business stuff if you want more business. But honestly, it isn't an experience that you really have any control of in terms of content.
Right. Okay. And let's take one final question. Linda asks, is it worth the time on Facebook, or should we be using Twitter or something else?
You know, Facebook has gotten so pay to play that it is very, very hard for small businesses to be competitive. The thing that I would say is if you're in a non-major metropolitan area, you actually have a stronger case because you're not competing against as many, you know, local brands. Here in New York, for example, I think the average per CPC per user is like 50 cents or a dollar, which is a waste of time. You know, if you're back in, you know, if you're even in like, I don't know, my friends live in Bountiful, Utah. If you're there, you have less of a competitive set, and therefore the cost per user is a lot lower, and those users are currently being undervalued. All that said, you know, you can try to focus on Twitter. The problem with Twitter is that in non-metropolitan areas, it is less useful in some ways. What I tend to do is try to focus on at least one of the networks that can be particularly strong. If you're working with something that's very visual, I use Instagram or I use Pinterest to engage with that audience. You know, if you're going for younger kids or millennials or anyone under the age of 50 and non-gender specific, Instagram is the way to go. If you want to go for the Midwest and you want to go for sort of the mom types, Pinterest has proven its record or its value as a traffic driver.
All right. Thank you for that. So we're just about at the top of the hour. So thank you very much for being here. That was really interesting.
I'm happy to share, and I'm sorry if it's a little too specific.
No, great information. Thank you.
No worries.
Bye.
Peace.
Bye. So I'd like to thank both of our guests for taking the time to share their expertise today. Just so everyone knows, there are no Den calls in September, as Carol's going to be running that self-publishing boot camp. But if you're a member, it's free to you. So I really strongly recommend you go on there and learn all about self-publishing. I know she has some great stuff in store for you. And we will be back at the Den calls in October. Thanks, everyone. Bye.